This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 69, Corey Michelow. On April 2, 2021, Brianna Michelow dropped off her 6-year-old son, Corey, at his father's house in Barnegat, New Jersey, for their scheduled visitation. She expected to see him that afternoon, but instead, she got a phone call from Corey's father saying they were headed to the hospital. By the time Brianna figured out what was happening, the police were on her doorstep with the worst news any mother could ever receive. Her precious little first grader was dead. Since Corey's death, Brianna has received no information from the police, the medical examiner, or the prosecutor's office regarding what happened to her son, and to date, no arrests have been made. This is a story of the failure of Child Protective Services to do the one thing they're tasked with doing. It's also the story of a family court's failure to believe a mother trying her very hardest to protect her child from abuse. In this episode, you'll hear my conversation with Corey's heartbroken mom, Brianna, who wants not only justice for her son, but also protection for other children in situations like Corey's. This is the gut-wrenching story of Corey Michelow. Before I start, I'd like to thank my newest patrons, Jody from Sydney, Nova Scotia, Katie from La Mesa, California, Sean from Merrillville, Indiana, Amanda from Sylvester, Georgia, and Harley G. and Nicole J. Thank you all so much for your support. Every pledge brings me closer to my goal of devoting myself full-time to the podcast and the blog, and I'm truly grateful for all of your support. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/stlcpod. Thank you all again. Unfortunately, the story I'm about to tell you contains elements that will be all too familiar to my listeners. In too many cases I've covered on the podcast and on Suffer the Little Children blog, the agencies whose entire purpose is protecting children have failed to do exactly that. Too many stubborn, ignorant, or corrupt family court judges have ignored evidence of child abuse presented by innocent parents pleading with them to protect their children and to stop visitation with their abusers. Too many children have died because of the ineptitude, recklessness, or apathy of those who could have saved those children's lives if only they gave a damn. This is another of those stories. Corey Travis Michelow was born on May 1, 2014, to teenage mother Brianna Michelow of Englishtown, New Jersey. According to Brianna, Corey was conceived when his father, Christopher Gregor of Barnegat, sexually assaulted her. At the time, Brianna was 16, Christopher 21. Despite the circumstances, Brianna decided to keep the baby, while Christopher, who was in college and would ultimately become a real estate broker specializing in commercial properties, refused to acknowledge Corey's existence. For the first 5 years, Brianna, who lived with her mother, Rebecca, happily raised her son without his father, who had no involvement in Corey's life whatsoever. When Corey was 5, however, after Brianna requested child support, Christopher petitioned the court and was immediately awarded visitation with the son who didn't know him from a stranger on the street. Corey came home from his very first visit with his father bearing a split lip, which he said was from Christopher smacking him. Brianna reported this to the Division of Child Protection and Permanency, or DCP&P, which opened an investigation. When a caseworker questioned Christopher, he told them Corey had been injured when he got in the way while Christopher was trying to kick a soccer ball, and DCP&P closed the investigation as unsubstantiated. After another visit, Brianna noticed Corey was covered with abrasions that looked like rug burn. When she asked about the injuries, Corey told her that Christopher had forced him to get on a treadmill because he thought his son was too fat. When Brianna tried to talk to Christopher about it, he admitted he had forced Corey to get on the treadmill because he thought Corey was overweight, and he told Brianna that she needed to stop feeding him McDonald's. We're talking about a 5-year-old boy here. This, as is too often the case, became a pattern. Corey would visit his father. He would return with injuries he said his father inflicted by abusing him. Brianna would report the injuries to DCP&P, and nothing would ever come of their investigations. By the spring of 2021, Brianna was sick to death of her beautiful, brown-eyed little boy coming home covered in bruises and other injuries. On Thursday, April 1st, at a doctor's appointment, Corey, who was covered in bruises, disclosed that his father had caused his injuries by hitting him. One of the bruises was so severe that the doctor ordered a chest x-ray to ensure no bones were broken. Citing Corey's disclosure to the doctor, Brianna applied online for an emergency order giving her full custody, pending the outcome of the most recent DCP&P investigation. She included all of the evidence she had gathered thus far. Hours later, she received an email saying the order was denied. No phone call, no personal interaction whatsoever. Just a business-like email that essentially sealed her son's fate. The next day, Friday, April 2nd, 2021, Corey was scheduled for both visitation with his father and an appointment to talk to someone about the abuse allegations. Both Christopher and Brianna were supposed to accompany him to the appointment. Brianna dropped Corey off at Christopher's home around 9 a.m. as scheduled, hoping against hope that they would show up for the appointment. As she expected, they did not. In fact, Brianna didn't hear a peep from either Corey or his father until Christopher called her around 3:30 that afternoon, saying he was taking Corey to the hospital because he was throwing up and had been sleeping all day. Baffled, Brianna demanded more information. How could her son, who, aside from his multiple bruises, had been perfectly healthy and alert when she dropped him off that morning, now be sick enough to warrant a trip to the hospital? Instead of providing answers, Christopher merely told her to send him Corey's insurance information and hung up on her without even telling her which hospital they were going to. By now, beside herself with panic, Brianna called the police and insisted she needed to know where her son was. Officers visited Christopher's house, but he was not there. They tried calling him, but he didn't pick up. They were on the verge of issuing an Amber Alert when they received a call from staff at the Southern Ocean Medical Center in Manahawkin, who gave them the news that changed everything. Around 5:30 p.m. on Friday, April 2nd, 2021, Brianna and her mom answered a knock at the door of their home, where they would be told the very thing every parent dreads most. When she was told her son had passed away, Brianna refused to believe it. It didn't make sense that her healthy little boy, who she'd seen just hours before, could be gone. She vaguely remembers an officer telling her Corey was poisoned, but she's not sure what was said or in what context. What she's sure of is that she told investigators on the spot that she was absolutely certain Christopher was responsible for Corey's death. While Brianna spoke to investigators from the prosecutor's office, the search was on for Christopher, who had left the hospital right after or possibly before Corey was pronounced dead. Ultimately, Christopher was located in Tennessee, which is, at minimum, a 13-hour drive from the Barnegat, New Jersey area. Immediately, Christopher requested an attorney, putting an end to any possibility of investigators getting any information from him. Principal Josh Toddings of the Collins School, where Corey attended first grade, sent a message to the families of children who attended the school, informing them of Corey's death and offering counseling for anyone who needed it. Imagine a classroom full of 6- and 7-year-olds struggling to comprehend why the little boy who sat next to them, who laughed with them, who walked in with his backpack every day just like they did, would never again walk through that classroom door. Corey's funeral arrangements were handled by the Lester Memorial Home in Jamesburg. On the facility's website, Corey's obituary states, "Born in New Brunswick, Corey lived his life in the Monroe Township, Englishtown area. Corey enjoyed playing football and was very excited to recently participate in his first team practice. He liked to play Roblox, a video game, and had an interest in our solar system, planets, and space. He enjoyed playing with his friends in the park and the trampoline park. He loved art and drawing. Surviving are his mother, Brianna Michelow of Englishtown, his grandparents, Vito and Rebecca Loudon Michelow of Englishtown, his uncles, James Bergen of Monroe Township and Gino Michelow of Warminster, Pennsylvania, his aunt, Nicole Michelow of Englishtown, his special friends, Dustin Vordren of Philadelphia and Richard Palumbo Jr. of Englishtown, and several great aunts, cousins, and many more loving family and friends." Christopher and his family were pointedly left out of the obituary. Family and friends attended visitation on the evening of April 7th and the morning of April 8th, immediately before Corey's funeral at 10 a.m. at the Lester Funeral Home. Afterward, Corey was laid to rest at Fernwood Cemetery in Jamesburg. A few days later, an article entitled "Family Looking for Answers in Barnegat Boy's Death" was published on the Tap into Stafford/LBI website. The reporter wrote that the Barnegat Police Department referred any questions about Corey's death to the Ocean County Prosecutor's Office, where the press officer, Brian Huntenberg, said,
"The matter is under investigation. We have no further comment at this time."
That was about the same amount of information Brianna and her family had received from investigators as well. By then, the Michelow family had retained an attorney, Christopher Conrad of Eichen Crutchlow Zaslow,
to protect their legal interests in ascertaining all of the facts surrounding Corey's untimely passing.
Their attorney was quoted in the article, saying,
"I can say on behalf of the family that they appreciate the outpouring of sympathy and love from Corey's classmates and the community. They also appreciate everyone respecting their privacy at this time while they grieve."
According to the article, Christopher had been questioned by police. He had also responded to allegations on Facebook that he had abused Corey, saying,
"Sharing of false information will have consequences."
On the evening of April 14th, community members organized a vigil for Corey at Barnegat Bay Beach, where Monsignor Ken from the local St. Mary's Church told a moving allegory.
"Down below the surface of a quiet pond lived a little colony of water bugs. They were a happy colony, living far away from the sun. For many months, they were very busy scurrying over the soft mud on the bottom of the pond. They did notice that every once in a while, one of the colony seemed to lose interest in going about. Clinging to the stem of a pond lily, it gradually moved out of sight and was seen no more. Looks at one of the water bugs to another. One of our colony is climbing up the lily stalk. Where do you think she is going? Up, 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 slowly down. Even as they watch, the water bug disappeared from sight. His friends waited and waited, but it didn't return. That's funny, said one water bug to another. Wasn't she happy here? Asked the second. Where do you suppose she went? One to the third. No one had an answer. They were greatly puzzled. Finally, one of the water bugs, a leader in the colony, gathered his friends together. I have an idea. The next one of us who climbs up the lily stalk was promised to come back and tell us where he or she went and why. We promised, they said solemnly. One spring day, not long after, the very water bug who had suggested the plan found himself climbing up the lily stalk. Up, up, up he went. Before he knew what was happening, he had broke through the surface of the water and fallen onto a broad green lily pad above. When he awoke, he looked about with surprise. He couldn't believe what he saw. A startling change had come to his old body. His movement revealed four silver wings and a long tail. Even as he struggled, he felt the impulse to move his wings. The warmth of the sun soon dried the moisture from the new body. He moved his wings again, suddenly found himself up above the water. He had become a dragonfly. Swooping and dipping in great curves, he flew through the air. He felt exhilarated from the new atmosphere. By and by, the new dragonfly glided happily on the lily pad to rest. Then it was that he chanced to look below the bottom of the pond. Why, he was right above his old friends, the water bugs. There they were, scurrying around, just as he had been doing some time before. The dragonfly remembered the promise. The next one of us who climbs up the lily stalk will come back and tell where he or she went and why. Without thinking, the dragonfly darted down. Suddenly, he hit the surface of the water and bounced away. Now that he was a dragonfly, he could no longer go into the water. I can't return, he said in dismay. At least I try. But I can't keep my promise. Even if I could go back, no one of the water bugs would know me in my new body. I guess I'll just have to wait until they become dragonflies, too. Then they'll understand what has happened to me and where I went. And the dragonfly winged off happily into his wonderful new world of sun and air.
May 1st would have been Corey's 7th birthday. The day came and went without Brianna learning anything new about the investigation into her son's death. Fed up, a couple weeks later, she began hanging flyers from telephone poles in the local area, demanding justice for Corey. Imagine Brianna's surprise when she realized she was being followed around by Christopher's mother and another family member who were tearing down the flyers as fast as they went up. When asked for the reason they were pulling the flyers down, the family member replied,
"Mind your own fucking business."
For the record, the flyers said nothing about Christopher or his family and didn't mention any of their names. There weren't even any statements incriminating Christopher or anyone else. Apparently, this family is so interested in saving face, they don't care that their actions make them look insanely shady. For what it's worth, Christopher's father is a retired New Jersey state trooper, so think of that what you will. At one point, the judge who denied Brianna's emergency order on April 1st set up a court date, but when she arrived for the hearing, she was told the judge didn't want to see her. In fact, he blamed DCP&P for their failure to protect Corey, evidently absolving himself of any culpability whatsoever. Isn't government immunity grand? As of this recording, the Michelot family still has no answers regarding what happened to the bright, loving 6-year-old boy with the short brown hair and the big, soulful brown eyes. They may be getting closer, however. On June 28th, Brianna posted in the Facebook group she created called Justice for Corey, which I'll link in the show notes.
The chief medical examiner reviewed the report and sent it back to the pathologists, where they are doing final tests and speaking to the prosecutor. They said it should be finalized this week. Let's pray it is, and we finally will have some answers.
When there's any update about Corey's cause of death, and I hope an arrest in the case, I'll post an update on sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. Interestingly, one of Christopher's ex-girlfriends has come forward to tell her story publicly, saying,
"It breaks my heart to even be writing this. When I dated Corey's father 7 years ago, he told me Corey was not his child. I believed him, and I wish I hadn't. Over the 2 years I was with him, he was abusive in every way, emotionally, mentally, and physically. He has put me in the hospital, left me scarred and often broken. At just 18, he got me pregnant, and we planned on keeping the child. But it wasn't long before he was physically abusing me while pregnant, and I felt I had no choice but to have an abortion. Corey's death has unfortunately validated that decision for me, and fortunately, Corey has a sibling in heaven to be with him. I really do believe that. I will live with the regret of not pressing charges, not warning Bree, not doing more to prevent the hurt he caused everyone after me. I found the strength to remove myself from that situation, and now we must all find the strength to fight again so that this man can never hurt a soul again. We need justice for Corey, and I hope anyone who knew Corey, knows Bree and Rebecca, or unfortunately knows Corey's biological father, is prepared to find the strength to do that."
Multiple other women who dated Christopher have told Brianna they were also abused by him, but they have not yet come forward to tell their stories. Just to make things clear, Christopher has not been named a suspect in Corey's death and has not been charged with any related offense. Like in too many stories I've told, Brianna begged for help and no one listened until it was too late. Changes need to be made in the systems designed to protect children. They are failing at the one task they were created to accomplish. Brianna has created a petition demanding an explanation about why DCP&P and the family court system failed to protect her son. I'll also link the petition in the show notes, so please sign and share it as far and wide as you can. I had the honor of speaking with Brianna for this episode, which you'll hear next after this quick break. If you're like me, you're a bit overwhelmed by all of the teeth whitening products on the market. This next sponsor has provided me with some very interesting facts to pass on to you. Fact 1, teeth whitening does not whiten your teeth. It removes the stains and restores the tooth to its natural color. Natural colors vary per person, but for most, it's an off-white or slightly yellowish undertone. Fact 2, teeth whitening does not damage teeth, but it does temporarily dehydrate. When dehydrated, the pores in the enamel are open and exposed. Open pores invite acids and sugars, which, as we all know, lead to tooth decay. Avoid or minimize acidic and sugary substances for at least 24 hours after whitening. Also, avoid staining substances as the teeth are more susceptible to restaining during this period. Fact 3, tooth sensitivity is the result of tooth dehydration. When the pores of the enamel are open, the teeth become dehydrated, exposing the nerve to the elements. As the tooth rehydrates, the sensitivity will dissipate. To accelerate the rehydration and curb sensitivity, use a post-whitening application known as remineralization or desensitizing gel. Fact 4, caps and veneers cannot be whitened because they do not have pores for the stains to latch to. Prior to having dental work, you should whiten your teeth, restoring them to their natural color, as the dentist will be color matching to your current shade. Fact 5, the key to teeth whitening is the delivery device, so as long as a whitening product is a peroxide-based whitener, it will remove the stains. What differentiates one product from the next is the device that holds the whitening agent to the tooth without interruption. Whitening strips neglect the crevices and molars, and they slide on your teeth. Saliva floods the generic trays because they are bulky and do not create a seal. Oh, and you likely did not know this, but LED lights are novelty items that add no benefit. You need a high-output UV light only found at the dentist. Don't fall for the gimmick. If you insist on a light that does not work, get one on Amazon for under $5. The number one whitening device recommended by dentists is the custom-fitted tray. You can have your dentist make you trays for $300 to $600, or you can head over to SmileBrilliant.com and use their Lab Direct mail-in process for a fraction of the price you would pay at the dentist. Oh, and if you grind your teeth at night, you can also purchase Smile Brilliant's custom-fitted night guards, once again, for a fraction of the price the dentists charge. Once again, that's SmileBrilliant.com, and use my coupon code CHILDREN for an exclusive Suffer the Little Children discount. Thank you so much for joining me, Brianna.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me and listening.
Of course. When or how did you know Christopher, who is Corey's father? How did you know him?
Well, when I was 16, I was having some friends over. My one friend in particular invited Christopher over. I had no idea who he was. And that night, he ended up sexually assaulting me. He was 21. And again, I was 16. And basically, that was our whole relationship. I mean, I didn't have one with him besides for that. I ended up pregnant, and he knew about it and chose not to support me. He actually wanted me to have an abortion, and I chose not to. So for the majority of Corey's life, he stayed away and just told me he was too busy with college and his life to come around.
You didn't have much contact with him at all during that first few years?
No, not at all.
And then when did he show interest in being a part of Corey's life all of a sudden?
He didn't become interested in Corey's life until about a year after he started paying child support and, you know, got a DNA test. I believe the reason he did become interested was because finally, after 5.5 years, he told his family that he did have a son. And I think they kind of made him become a part of Corey's life.
How did Corey feel about seeing him?
Corey was very confused. He had no idea who this man was, and he didn't want to go. He was afraid to go. And the first time he had a visitation at his house alone was the first time Corey came home with an injury. He dropped Corey off at my front door. Corey came in, and he had a busted lip, and he had blood on his shirt. I couldn't believe it. I was just thinking, like, why wouldn't you come up to the door and explain what happened to him? If it was an accident or anything, explain it to me. He didn't. He went right home. And I'm sitting there like questioning Corey. And eventually he told me that his dad smacked him in the mouth because he cursed. I freaked out. I took him to the police station. The cops called CPS and they showed up the next day. They spoke to Corey alone. They spoke to me and they went and spoke to his father. And his excuse was they were playing soccer and he went to kick the ball and Corey was in the way. So he accidentally kicked him in the face. And I think the reason CPS believed it was because his father, Corey's grandfather on that side, backed it up and said, yeah, I was there. I saw it, which I don't believe, obviously. They all were protecting his father. To be honest with you, I think they knew about this abuse the whole time. I've had his ex-girlfriends tell me that his parents knew that they were being abused but did nothing about it. I don't think his family is really interested in protecting him. I think they're interested in protecting their last name. They don't want to be known as the people that raised an abuser, a potential murderer, you know. He preys on people that are weaker than him, as you can tell, you know, women and children. I don't think he dared do this to another man.
It seems like a definite power play.
Oh, yeah. Once he started realizing children were an easier target than even women, that was his go-to. I mean, he hurt someone else's son. And then when he realized he could do this to his own son, he just went right for it.
It's unforgivable. But if he was only seeing his son because his family thought he should, and he really didn't care about Corey at all. I mean, sure, his resentment would probably exacerbate any violent tendencies he already had.
I believe that's what his goal was. I think he hated me for having Corey and not, you know, getting an abortion. And I think that gave him a lot of hatred towards me, which then went to Corey because he couldn't hurt me because I wouldn't allow it. I didn't want to be around him. So he took all of his anger out on Corey. And I realized over the last 2 years, if I, you know, got into an argument with him over text or in person, that's when Corey's abuse would get worse. Mm-hmm. And I noticed this pattern. And it's sad because I would have to bite my tongue or not fight with him in order for Corey to not be hurt by him. I saw the fear in my son's eyes whenever he had to go there, whenever he was around him. And there was nothing I could do, because when I called CPS and they went there and did absolutely nothing, it would be worse for Corey. He would either get hurt worse or emotionally abused worse. And if I called the cops to go there, it would be worse for him because they would leave and do nothing. And so every time this happened, he knew he could get away with it.
It snowballed that way, the sense of power that he had and control.
Yes. And over the last 2 years, it just built up more and more and more every time I called them. And at one point, it was like, why am I even calling these people? I gave up for a couple months. And then the last time I did, which was about 2 weeks before he passed, it was just at such a point where I was like, I can't let them not do anything when they go there. They have to go there. And then, you know, the last time they went, the caseworker called me and he said, everything's fine. You know, we can have our own interview since it's the weekend. We'll do it on Monday. I said, hell no, you're going back in there and you're going to do something. I was not taking it anymore. And, you know, he went back in, took pictures of bruises and then left. So I got a welfare check done and I called the cops there because I was like thinking in my head, they just left. He's probably angry. Right. God knows what he's doing to Corey. I told them, Corey has bruises everywhere on his body. Take his shirt off and look at those bruises and tell me nothing's going on. So they call me about an hour later after they do the welfare check. And they said, you know, we saw all these bruises, but your son seemed comfortable, so we don't feel like we need to do anything.
I wonder if they interviewed Corey out of the presence of his father.
I honestly don't think so. I really don't think anyone has ever done that. Corey was so afraid of this man that if he was by him anywhere in the house, he would not say anything to them. That was a problem because he wasn't disclosing to the caseworkers or the cops. But I understand why he wasn't, because if they left without doing anything and he told, it would be horrible for him. So he had to keep it a secret. And honestly, he kept it a secret from me a lot. If I asked him, like, where'd you get this bruise from? He would, you know, oh, from football or something. But you know, you don't get a slap mark on your face from football. You don't get black eyes from football. He wasn't even playing football with other children. He was just practicing with his father. And when he started playing football, he only had one practice before he passed, unfortunately. But it was no contact football. It was flag football. So these bruises weren't coming from other children. They were coming from his dad.
If they had actually had a forensic interviewer talk to Corey and really
honestly,
get him comfortable.
That was the next step. Like I said, I made a report about a week and a half, 2 weeks before he passed. And they were just beginning to take the right steps towards actually having an investigation. And the day he passed, he was supposed to go to a child abuse expert. And I think they had something to do with forensic interview or something. Unfortunately, he passed that day. And I feel like that is not a coincidence that the walls were caving in on his father. The abuse was going to come out. I think that's why this happened, because it was going to come out.
We still don't know what happened. You don't know Corey's cause or manner of death at all.
No, I know it is being investigated as a homicide. It is in the major crimes unit of the prosecutor's office. I believe they are getting close to a cause of death. I've been in contact with the detectives and everybody. So hopefully soon. 6-year-olds just don't die naturally. He was never sick. He's barely ever had a cold. For it to come back as natural causes, it's so unlikely. I don't think there's many people out there that think that it was natural.
I can't imagine, even people in his own family, no matter what they say, I very much doubt that that anyone believes that.
Right. How defensive they are and the way they've been acting and, you know, him having a lawyer and not speaking to the detectives at all. Even the day, you know, my son passed, he ran to Tennessee, which is very far from New Jersey. And then when he was interviewed in Tennessee, he immediately wanted a lawyer. So...
Okay, so they've been able to make contact with him, but not actually get any information.
None. And if your son just passed away and you don't know why, wouldn't you want to give all the information to these people that are trying to figure it out? Like, I've had, like, I would say 3 interviews with the police, the detectives, and that's because I asked for them, because I wanted to give them the information. So it's just totally different. Like, there's one parent here that wants to find out, and there's one parent here that refuses to talk to them.
It's just so blatant that I really, really hope that once the cause of death comes back, they'll file charges immediately.
I believe they will. I'm hoping, because, like, I mean, everyone has failed Corey when he was still here. For them to do it again when he's not here would just be ridiculous.
How many times did you call DCPMP, do you think?
I've been asked this question a lot, and honestly, I would give a rough estimate of about 100. I mean, wow. Over the last 2 years, and I'm including the calls like during the actual investigation, when I'd call them and ask them, what's going on? Are you investigating? Like the phone calls with the caseworker, there's been over 100. There's been a lot of open cases, and there's never been one actually investigating me. It's always been him, me calling, or the school calling, or someone calling about him. The worst part is he wasn't in school a lot this year because of COVID, but the times he did go to school, he always had bruises on him.
So this man was doing nothing to hide the effects. He wasn't strategically hitting in places people wouldn't notice or anything like that. It was just blatant.
It was everywhere. It was on his face. It was on his chest, his arms, his legs, his neck, just everywhere. And I feel like the right people did report the abuse, and it was just CPS just not doing anything. And I have no idea why they weren't seeing what I was seeing. And they made their excuses of Corey wasn't disclosing to anybody and, you know, this and that. I understand that, but that's if like a kid maybe has a skin knee or something. He had black eyes, anything you could think of. He's had bite marks on him. Horrible. I mean, how can you come up with any excuse for that and believe it? It's just ridiculous.
It really is.
The day before he passed, he disclosed to a doctor that I took him to that his dad was hitting him. I have the actual medical records from that day. I was with him that day when he was telling them. And, you know, it's really actually sad because I thought if Corey disclosed to this doctor, he wouldn't have to go back there.
Is that what brought about the emergency order?
Yes. I didn't get to go into the actual courthouse because, you know, COVID and everything, but I filed it online and sent it in. And the worst part is, I sent in all my evidence, and then apparently CPS sent in a report to the judge, you know, with their findings. And all I got was an email back saying it was denied. No one called me. No one wanted to talk to me about it. They just denied it. I felt failed. I was failed by these people. I could have, if he didn't go back there on Friday, he would still be here.
Especially since the forensic interview would have taken place and hopefully measures would have been taken at that point.
Right. And I told Corey when we were at the doctor's office, I got upset. I was crying. And I said, Corey, just tell this doctor and she'll help you. I shouldn't have said this, unfortunately, because I wasn't sure of it. But I said, if you tell this doctor, she'll help you and you will never have to see that man again. You know, he started crying and he told her.
That's what he wanted more than anything.
Yeah, I believe that if he told that doctor what happened, they would have done something. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And I don't understand why. They wanted a disclosure. He disclosed to them. What else did they want? They saw the bruises. He had to get an x-ray on his chest because he had such a bad bruise on his chest. They thought something was broken. So why is that not enough? I just don't understand.
There is no good reason for that whatsoever. And for the court to deny your order just out of pocket like that. It makes no sense at all. And it really goes to show how little family court is invested in protecting children.
Right. I just don't understand how anyone involved in this sleeps at night. I really hope they don't, because they were able to do something. I don't feel like anyone should have had any questions in their mind if it was going on. And if they were to make sure that these visits and he didn't have to go there anymore, that wasn't, you know, violating a parent's rights. We didn't want to violate anyone's rights. Well, why? If he's hurting his child, who cares? That's your job. You're supposed to protect these children, and you didn't. My request was to temporarily have full custody until the DCPMP, the CPS investigation was over and there were findings. Because in my head, I was thinking, well, once they fully investigate, they're going to see he's been abused and he will never have to go back there. You know, I wasn't asking for much. I was just asking for them to help protect Corey and to figure out what was going on. The caseworker that was the most recent one, he actually reached out to me. Corey passed away on Friday, so he reached out to me the next week. On Monday, he called me and he was crying. And he said, I don't know what happened or why this happened. We were trying to go as quick as we can. You know, unfortunately, with the holidays, not a lot of people were working. And I just couldn't believe he was telling me that. Basically, because it was Good Friday, there weren't people working at the office, so they couldn't do anything. Let's blame it on a holiday.
Kids get abused on holidays just as well as they do on regular days. Child abuse doesn't wait because you have the day off.
Right. And unfortunately, them waiting that one day was enough.
That's all it takes. Just it takes a minute. The day that you dropped off Corey, that was about 9 a.m. when you dropped Corey off.
Right.
Then you were expecting to hear from him later that afternoon?
We were actually supposed to both go to the doctor's appointment for the child abuse expert at 12 p.m.
And when did you hear from Christopher?
Well, he skipped the appointment. And so around 3:30, he called me and told me he was taking Corey to the hospital. Corey was throwing up and he was sleeping a lot. He wasn't waking up. And I was confused. I mean, what do you mean? Like, what's going on? Why would he be throwing up and everything? And he just quickly said, send me his insurance card information, and hung up on me.
And Corey was fine that morning.
Perfectly fine. He had all these bruises from previous abuse, but he was still okay. He was happy. He was with me. You know, he didn't want to get dropped off, but you know, he was his normal self. He got out of the car. He gave me a hug and a kiss and he walked in. He was walking, he was talking, he was breathing, he was fine. There was no indications that in less than 7-6 hours, he was going to be gone.
He didn't seem to have any type of head injury. He was alert.
Nothing. No, he didn't have a stomach. He wasn't complaining about anything. And he would. And if he was complaining, I would have had him at the doctor's office.
Of course.
And the worst part is, he wouldn't even tell me what hospital Corey was at.
So you didn't know at all until later that afternoon?
He told me he was going to the hospital, and then he wouldn't answer me when I asked him, what hospital are you at? I'm worried. I need to see my son. Where is he? If he's sick, I need to be there. Never answered. So I made a police report, and I said, I have no idea where my son is. His dad told me he was very sick and going to the hospital, and he has not answered me, and I need to know where he is now. They went to his house, and he wasn't there. They called him. He wouldn't answer. The next step was they were going to issue an Amber Alert. Then someone at the hospital he passed away at called the police to report it. That's when my local police station, they came and knocked on my door and they told me. And I looked at them. I was like, no, wrong kid, wrong person. This isn't, he was fine this morning. What do you mean he passed away? I mean, I was confused. I was angry. And for the first like hour, I was in denial. I was like, you need to make sure that you have the right kid. I don't think you do. I did not believe it. And then my mind, the next thing it went to was, oh my God, he killed him.
Yeah, of course.
And that's where it began. I couldn't believe it. You know, me and my mom kept saying, like, I can't believe he actually did it.
Oh, good. Your mom was home with you?
Yeah. She was at the door when they told me. I mean, it was horrific. It was a scene.
Yeah, the disbelief, that would be the first thing, and it would be the hardest thing to overcome, because how could this happen to a healthy 6-year-old?
I mean, I immediately told the cops and everyone, the detectives, that his dad did this. And my next question for them was, where is his dad? What is he doing? And they said, we don't know.
So he left the hospital pretty quick.
I believe before my son passed away, he left. The police actually stayed parked in front of my house for about a week, 24/7, to make sure that his dad didn't come here. Because at one point, they believed that he might come here and do something to me.
At least they seem to be taking things seriously. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Was Christopher or anyone from his family at the funeral?
No. And I did not include them in the obituary either, because I don't think they deserve to be recognized on there.
Is he on Corey's birth certificate?
No.
So they still gave him rights. Did they have to do a paternity test to give him visitation?
Yeah, they did that. I can explain to you why he wasn't on their birth certificate. He was able to do it if he wanted to. He didn't want to do it until his last name was changed to his. He was able to do it. He could just go to court. Honestly, I wasn't fine with him going on it, but he had the rights to. But he wanted to change my son's middle name and last name. I said no. I fought him in court, and I said, nope, it's not happening. And we actually had a court date. It wasn't set up yet, but he did file to get a name change, and I was fighting it. Because, no, first of all, the middle name, that's ridiculous. Why would you have to change his middle name? My son was almost 7 years old. He knows his last name. You know, he learned how to write it, spell it. It's his last name. You're not changing that just because you wanted to step in after this long.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all. It's just another power play, another control move. You've been trying to get answers for weeks and still haven't gotten anything. And I noticed you had put up flyers that members of his family, including his mother, were tearing them down.
Yes, they saw that I was putting them up and they drove right behind me and his mother got out of the car and I was standing there putting it up and she came right behind me and ripped it right from in front of me.
And these flyers said nothing about her son or their family name, just wanting answers for Corey's death.
Yep, there was a picture of Corey and it had, you know, hashtag justice for Corey, but nothing about them, nothing about their son. And they went and ripped every single one around town. I mean, every single one.
For them to react that way, even before the cause of death comes out, is so suspicious and incriminating. I don't know how they think that this is making them look any better.
Exactly. I have no idea what makes them do the things they do. But I think they're just panicking right now because they know it's over for them. There's nothing they can do to fix this time. You know, they always covered his ass when he was abusing other people and his child. But now they can't. This is real. This is a murder charge. Unfortunately, it took this to finally get him, hopefully, in trouble. But I said, hopefully he goes to prison the rest of his life because he won't stop. And
right.
If he gets away with this, who knows what he's going to do next? And I wouldn't put it past him doing this again to whether anyone, if it's a child, a woman. I really fear for other people.
Does he have any other children?
No, thank God.
Back when you were 16, did you file any charges against him?
I didn't. That was very stupid on my part. But I actually more recently was able to. I guess there's not any statute of limitations on it. And, you know, the fact that I was underage and he was 21. So that's in, you know, the process. Hopefully it's just another thing that's added on. And I mean, the proof is there. A child, he was born when I was 17 and he was 22. So that's proof enough.
It wasn't legal one way or the other. Why don't we talk a little bit about Corey and what he was like and who he was? Because he seems like such a special, smart little boy.
Yeah, he was very, very unique. He was really, really smart, too. I mean, he was actually very good at chess. He taught me how to play chess.
Wow.
So he's very, very, very smart. He was really good in math. And he loved the solar system. He can name every planet in order. Could tell you a bunch of names of the stars. He knew, you know, how big they were. So he was very, very smart and he loved to draw. He drew the planets a lot. You know, he was very good at it and he was definitely a unique, smart child. You know, he loved school. He loved, you know, drawing. He loved reading. I was amazed at how good of a human he was. He was so sweet. He loved me to death. I loved him to death. We had such a great bond, and it was amazing. He was so caring towards me. He was protective towards me.
Even just from the photos of you guys together, you know, the bond is very apparent.
Yeah, I'm happy it is because, I mean, he was my world. That's all I talked about. When I went to the store, it was like, okay, I'm buying stuff for Corey. Like, it was never about myself. It was him.
He seemed like he was definitely very well loved, and your family seems to be the same way about him. They just adored him.
Oh yeah, we all did, 100%. That was our world. I mean, he was my parents' only grandchild. He was spoiled.
What were his favorite things?
I don't know if a lot of people have heard of this, but Dragon Ball Z. That was he loved it. He liked Naruto. It's like another anime. You know, he didn't like the classic children's shows like Paw Patrol and everything. He was definitely, you know, special and unique. And I love that about him. And, you know, whenever he started liking something, I loved it, too. You know, we'd sit there and draw the characters from the show together for hours. And he loved it. And he was actually Goku from Dragon Ball Z two Halloweens ago. Last year, he was Naruto and he loved it.
And who were his favorite people?
Oh, well, it would have to be me, definitely.
Yeah, best friends.
And, you know, my mom and dad and his aunt, he had so much love for all of us. And it was amazing. He just loved spending time with all of us.
Yeah. Did he have little friends from school?
Yep. And he actually told me he had a little girlfriend.
Oh, that's so cute.
And he was like, I got to sit next to her during reading time on the floor. It was cute. His teachers reached out to me, you know, after he passed, and they just said he was such a sweet, loving, caring little boy. You know, everyone loved him. You know, they told me a lot of his classmates were upset about this.
Must be so hard to try to explain to other first graders.
when it first happened, I was just like, why is this happening to me? It's not, this doesn't happen to people, but unfortunately it honestly does. And I've heard from people that it has happened to. Most of the stories, it's not something natural. The people that did fail Corey, CPS, some of the police, honestly, I'm not going to lie. I feel like they need to not admit because they know they did something wrong. I just want an apology for not helping him. These people are just so non-sympathetic towards it. Like, they're just trying to cover their asses at this point, you know? But someone has to admit their wrongdoing. Someone has to, because I know that the person that did this, they're guilty of doing it, but it could have been prevented by these people.
There's a lot of other culpability there.
Yeah. I mean, I told these people, I begged them, and they just wouldn't listen. And the day before he died, my son even was trying to get help and asking the people to help and disclosing to people in hopes that he would be, like, wouldn't have to see him ever again. It's just no one wanted to listen. They could have prevented this from day one when I called them, telling him he had a busted lip.
They need to believe children. That's the main thing. Is when a child tells you they're afraid, there's a reason. It's not, they're not being manipulative. They're not following the other parents' directives. If they're afraid, they're afraid for a reason.
And I mean, you could see the fear in my son's eyes whenever he had to go around him. It just really sucks that they messed up this bad. Once this is all said and done, and hopefully Corey does get justice, my plan is not to stop from there. I want to help other children.
That's awesome.
You know, I don't want this. Yeah, I don't want this to happen to anyone. I will fight to make laws in Corey's name. So, you know, if a kid discloses they have all these bruises, you need to listen and do something. Like, I don't know exactly what, you know, the law would say, but, you know, I definitely want something in place so these kids can be protected better.
It's all across the country that people are dealing with this. And in my opinion, child protection needs to be on a federal level. Letting it be handled by the state or the county is not working.
No, absolutely not. And people have said to me, the caseworkers are so overworked, which, okay, I understand. Then there needs to be more caseworkers. There needs to be, you know, that's not a good excuse for me because my son's gone. So I don't care that you have a big caseload. I don't. And to blame my son's death because someone had too many cases is ridiculous. I don't want to hear that. Like I said, hopefully something changes. You know, I'm hoping. It's not a definite. I don't know if it'll happen. I mean, I've seen cases since Corey's passing, the same exact situation. I don't want to say anybody's names, but like after Corey passed, a few weeks after, there was a mom in the same exact situation. She filed an emergent order so her son didn't have to go back to the father. And then that was the day before he passed away. The next day he was gone because the judge ignored her.
Yep.
And yeah. it's horrible.
It really is. It happens way too often. And in that case, I believe the husband took his son's life and his own.
Yeah, which is even worse because who are you going to bring to, like, what are you going to do? The father's gone, but now you need to hold the judge responsible, everyone responsible, because that's the only way you can get justice now.
I'm so glad that we got a chance to do this. And I'm so grateful that you, you know, were able to tell us more about who Corey is and remember him as a person. That's the most important thing to me. I really do hope for justice for Corey and for you. You deserve it. You've been through way more than anyone should.
Yeah, definitely. I'm hoping the right thing is done. And I will definitely update everybody as soon as I do. I've been very transparent with everybody. I've been updating when I get updates because I want everyone to be, you know, involved and to know what's going on.
The more people know, the better, I think. That's why I do this. You know, the more people are aware of what goes on, the more people can maybe get involved before a tragedy like this happens.
Thank you so much. And
you're welcome.
Thank you for talking to me. I appreciate it so much.
Before I end the episode, I wanted to play a few clips of Corey's sweet little voice. Here he is reading a book about the solar system.
What is the fifth planet from the sun? It is big. It's made of gas. It is Jupiter.
Here's Corey playing with dinosaur and shark puppets.
I'm ready. Uncle, you ready? Yeah!
This is Corey playing Beyblades.
Here we go. Sorry, guys. But if you want to be a real blader, you have to do it this way. Rough and my style.
Finally, here's Corey just being silly with his favorite person, his mommy.
Look,
So, guys, this is my mommy and your...
All Brianna wanted for the past 2 years was to protect her son from his abuser. Now that Corey is gone, all she wants is justice for him and to see the person responsible for his death put behind bars for the rest of his life. Corey was a beautiful, innocent, caring child who deserved to be protected. He did not deserve to be pummeled, used as a punching bag, and murdered. He deserved to be heard. He did not deserve to have his fears and his mother's concerns ignored and brushed aside in favor of his abuser's rights. Children are people. They deserve the same rights as anyone else, and that includes the right to grow up and live their lives. Corey no longer has that opportunity, but as a country, as the human race in general, we must do better to protect our children and to intercept these painfully preventable tragedies. Corey deserves justice, and he deserves to be remembered. Rest in peace, Corey. You'll never be forgotten. My sources for this episode were the Justice for Corey Facebook page, Lester Memorial Home, Tap Into Local, the Fat Earth podcast on SoundCloud, and Brianna Michelow. That's it for this week. Join me next week for another story. If you like the show, please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. And please subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at www.sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes and become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter at STLC Pod. View photos related to today's case on Facebook and Instagram. Read more about today's case and many others at SufferTheLittleChildrenBlog.com. This podcast was written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music. Other music and sound effects for the show were created using sounds from AudioJungle.net. Hug your babies a bit closer tonight. Until next week, bye guys.